Next, there will from the Sacred Doctrine, Volume 1, page 2, on the proem pages from a prehistoric period. It is the one life, eternal, invisible, yet omnipresent, without beginning or end, yet periodical in its regular manifestations, between which periods reigns the dark mystery of non-being. Unconscious, yet absolute consciousness, unrealizable, yet the one self existing reality, truly a chaos to the sense, a cosmos to the reason. Its one absolute attribute, which is itself eternal, ceaseless motion, is called in esoteric parlance the great breath, which is the perpetual motion of the universe in the sense of limitless, ever-present space. That which is motionless cannot be divine. But then, there is nothing in fact and reality absolutely motionless within the universal soul. Again, the lecture for today is entitled The Foundation for Universal Unity.
Yes. What is the foundation for universal unity? The one life? What is that one life? What is the basis of that one life? What is the foundation of that one life? Well, it's said it is the reality that there is that which is eternal, that is boundless, that is immutable, and that is omnipresent. It ever was, it ever is, and it ever will be. Our finite minds have or are unable to conceive of the infinite, but is that which sustains all of life and is life itself. It is not a being, but beingness itself. It is from there which everything comes forth. So this unity, this oneness, well, we're told that as above, so below. So what do we see of this unity in the life that we live? Well, we see it everywhere. We heard this morning a declaration proclaimed by the United Lodge of Theosophists. What is it a declaration of? Unity. Unity. That we have eight minds that are engaged this morning in unity. Unity of thought. So the way we would say that the purpose of this is that are the thoughts and these words that we are expressing, we can put into deeds in our life. But this one life or this unity is, well, what we would say is manifesting all around us. We are in bodies that are a unity of all the different kingdoms of nature. That from the very essence of the elemental kingdoms, it comes forth into the mineral and then into the vegetable. From the vegetable, it comes into the animal, and from the animal, the human kingdom. Now each kingdom sacrifices itself for the other. That this unity is moving toward its ideal goal of self-conscious beings that they are in the same instance as the unity of God and man. There is that unity of God-man that exists. That's why theosophy says that we are perfectible. And how can it say that? Well, we'll go back to that first idea that we are all rays of that great sun. We are all drops in that ocean of life. So, in essence, we are all the same. We only are different by degree. And that is on this outward plane, this material plane. This is where we, as spiritual beings, come in contact with life. It is a ne necessary progression or evolution for our contact, this unit contacted with other units in life, can raise them up into higher states of consciousness. So, this one life is one consciousness. So, therefore, we can extrapolate from that that all of life is consciousness to in varying degrees. So, this consciousness is the foundation for unity or universal brotherhood. We are told again and again, we cannot know what deity is unless we know it in and through ourselves. Well, how can that be? How can we know what a deity or that enlightened part of us? How can we know it? Well, through effort. One must urgently desire the need or the willingness to be united with one's higher nature. That means that one has got control of one's lower nature. And that battle can ensue for many incarnations. But the unity of life is ever drawing us forward. Forward to what? To that ultimate unity. But we are in matter. So we try to bring matter and we unite it. And we have united it to form a physical form that can be a vehicle for spirit. The universe is here for the experience of the soul, for that unity. That unity is ever moving forward, ever expanding outward. As we are evolving from within outward. So within us is the knowledge of all of these things, the laws of cause and effect. It's the law of unity. Numbers. Where do all numbers come from? Zero. The ultimate unity. No thing. Everything comes forth from that unity. And we see within that unity other units. And we are the sum of those other units. We sometimes wonder if there is this foundation for unity, why? Why does the world in such a condition? Why is the world in such chaos? Well, it becomes very apparent to many of us that there's no foundation for unity in our world. Our world is in chaos because there's no singularity of thought. And then add in that karma, that desire principle, and what is happening is selfishness is running supreme. To be truly a unit, one has to be selfless to that unit. One must sacrifice to that unit. And not meaning, you know, that this unity is on the physical plane, but more of it's on the astral plane and on the spiritual plane. The spiritual plane where it is ever existing. Our purpose or our task is to bring that unity onto this plane. And that unity begins in our thoughts and then our words and ultimately our deeds. Unity has to be something that is recognized. And then until it's recognized as being the reality, there will ever be that selfish motive that is driving the forces of the world and those around us. How do we come in contact with this unity? Can we? Or is this just an intellectual conversation about what unity is? We all know what unity is. But does it exist in us? And theosophy says, yes, it does. And the goal of our work is to find a basis in that reality of that unchanging essence that is eternal, boundless, immutable, and omnipresent. Theosophy identifies it as the witness, the observer, that which looks upon things as they are. We are all that. That is the eternal, boundless, immutable, and not the present principle. But we have not realized its potential. We only see a partial expression of it. And as we study, we learn that the human form has within it all the powers of nature, all the potentialities of the universe. As above, so below. We are but a reflection of that universal unity. But as we have descended into darkness, we have become deluded, thinking that we are that darkness, that we are these things that we see around us, and that we are this body that ever is carrying us about in this material world. We are beings of light and of life. No one is outside this purview. Everything is within it, but it has no container. It is limitless. So if we can say that, our mind can be directly connected to this omnipresent deity. The mind is the vehicle for us to understand the universe. But that understanding means one thing that we have incorporated the heart into what we know. Because without the heart, there is no compassion. And compassion is no attribute, but it's the law itself. So we are that unity. And our foundation lies in the fact we identify with all of life, for all of life is conscious. We are at the apex of the evolutionary process for this round, for this humanity. So we are leading the wave forward. And with that lead comes much resistance. But most of the resistance is within our own nature. We need to free ourselves, and we free ourselves by freeing our mind. That we have the potential within us to do great things for humanity, for the world, for peace. That the world as it is now can be changed by our thought, by our words, by our deeds. So there are many examples of the foundation of universal unity. There are many examples of that unity throughout the world in which we live. So we'll leave it open for conversation and perhaps contributions of examples of unity in the world in which we live, which we think is so chaotic and so disharmonious at the moment. But where is the harmony? Where is the unity? I'll open it up for questions or statements. SL?
There is a chat which we think gets to the heart of the matter. And so we have a presentation on the basis of universal unity, but the chat asks, what does it matter? Why does it matter when we're one of billions? And so, in light of that, we wonder perhaps the unity. It matters because the unity has to start within a center, within a nucleus, whether it's an association of like minds or even within ourselves. We wonder if there are any further thoughts on that question as to why does it matter if there were only one of many?
Well, I think it goes to the point of a nucleus. We have to be, first of all, our own nucleus, and we have to know ourselves. And knowing ourselves is a lifelong journey. And we refer to the Gita, that we are not beings of one life, and that we have built up a great storehouse of karma. So that this unity is always being tested, is always being challenged. To be different in a world of so much similarities. But the difference is not in our being. The difference is in our ideas, and that because we are so many, there has to be a big a start or a beginning. So one element can touch another, can touch another, can touch another. So we are told to be strong. These ideas are not popular, but that's not so we should not try to discuss them or share them. So yes, we are great in number, and we these ideas are easily drowned out, especially when they're not spoken or when they're not expressed. JCS?
The thought occurred that the Grand Canyon is a remarkable physical manifestation. And yet at some point, one drop of water began to drip. And it was the perseverance, the process of each of these droplets across goodness only knows how much time that created the Grand Canyon, that eroded amazing amounts of rock. So if we think about that example and then consider that we are radiance of the one, and that as we join in a vibration of harmony and compassion and oneness and love, and as we sustain that aspiration, we too can impact the entire globe, the entire astral. We can transmit these ideas because we're joining back to the source, back to the unity of all soul.
Yes, very well expressed. Yes, SL.
So there's another chat that asks the question, if we are an individual nucleus and by our nature different from others, how do we function, or where do we function, or where do we find the unity to function in a world that's so different? And we were thinking that we have to function on the basis of universal ideas. Because yes, we see universal ideas have application to everywhere. All differentiated things are related to it. And so that's where we need to function. Because we may not be able to touch others with our other instruments. Yeah. There is a separateness there.
Yes. Universal ideas are impersonal. They apply to everyone. You know, the ideas that that we are a oneness, but within that oneness, we are all different. We're all different in our degrees of consciousness. And those degrees of consciousness are predicated on the experiences which we have underwent and which we have learned from. Because, again, the universe is here for the experience of the soul. So we have had many experiences. Our soul has seen much. It is unchanged, but the vehicle is slowly moving toward that point where it can express more fully that spiritual being. So, yeah, I think there was another chat. SL, could you read that one too?
So the chat, next chat is, why haven't organizations like the United Nations or other organizations that are devoted to the ideal of brotherhood of nations, why haven't they achieved unity, peace, brotherhood, et cetera? What is lacking from that approach? Have they achieved some degree of unity?
Well, it's an interesting question, and the United Nations is an attempt to bring the world to some kind of common ground, some kind of unity of thought, will, and teaching. And that the failure is that the units within that body are in conflict themselves. There is a conflict going on which they don't acknowledge. That conflict is going on within everyone. The conflict of our higher and our lower nature. Our lower nature is constantly trying to express itself, constantly being the driving force of our material life. Until that moment, we say, the mind says, that if I am to go beyond this place where I am now, I must control my lower nature. Then the mind says, well, that means I have to control myself. And exactly, our battle begins. And this is a battle that everyone faces. So we want peace in the world. We all do. And the United Nations is an attempt to bring that about. Yes, SL.
Well, just one comment before a question. The United Nations was not set up to ensure world peace, but as a means to peacefully resolve conflict. So as was pointed out, the conflict is in human nature. And the only thing we do is we try to set up a peaceful means of fighting all the time. And to a certain extent, that's been successful. Of course, there's always room for improvement. But we're wondering if we want to achieve some degree of a nucleus of universal brotherhood. And the only way that can be done is we each take responsibilities of ourselves. What is the role of study, self-discipline, self-responsibility? What roles do they play on an individual level that help establish a basis for unity in the world?
Go ahead.
The previous chat asked, what can we do? So how does self-study, self-discipline, self-development, how does that contribute?
Yes, well, it's a singularity of purpose. You know, why do we come to this study? Why do we come? For our own selfish motives, that we want to be in control someday? Or do we come to help alleviate the suffering of the world? Have we come with a effort in hand to do that? And we have learned that if we do not change the hearts and minds of humanity, it will never change. So that study reminds us of what we are. We are constantly under the pressure of a outside God influence. We are constantly under that pressure. We do not realize it because it is invisible. But the pressure is there because the whole world, or not the whole world, but the world in which we live, for the majority of it, thinks in that manner. So we must study to keep our minds on track, because our minds are like little monkeys. They want to run around and play. Our minds are constantly distracted, constantly taken off the things that it likes, and taken off the things that it does not like. So how do we get above that monkey mind? How do we access our higher nature? By study. By study. And that is our reminder that we have left behind in other lifetimes signposts for ourselves to remind us of our true nature. SL?
But doesn't that study have to be for a definite purpose, if it's going to be effective in the way suggested? We have to study in order to convince ourselves that there is a unity in life, that universal brotherhood is a fact in nature, that we have a self that is enduring, beyond the physical, immortal, if you will. And having convinced ourselves and have faith in that through our study, then we can begin to become more self-reliant and discipline our lower nature in the light of that. But we have to make the effort to learn. Each one has to make the effort to discover that reality within themselves through study, whether it's study of the teachings or self-study.
JCS.
And if we combine the two, the study of the teachings, the study of the fundamental propositions, and if we then turn that around and we begin to look within our own incarnation to see where and how those principles, have reality and reactions. Gradually, what happens is we've got a new measuring stick, don't we? We can say, okay, if I see internally those fundamental principles in action, and if I understand the difference between reaction and response, then I have a way of looking out into soul around the world to look into the words and deeds of others. To see that there is still a deific spark within each and all, regardless of what the outer manifestation is. Gradually, we develop compassion and understanding and perhaps wisdom of action. And all of that stems from conscious use of logic and study and meditation. Dwelling, pondering actively on these ideas, not passively, so that we can withstand the turbulence in the astral and withstand the pressure of the illusion of separateness and hatred and violence and animosity.
Yes, it's only through our study or the expansion of those ideas which we have come in contact with. You know, the fundamentals are self-evident truths. So there has to be some kind of application of those ideas for those to be self-evident. You know, we live in this outer world, but there's this inner world that we have only just begun to discover. So meditation takes us into that inner world. And sure, there's a lot of chaos at the doorway to that inner world. It's chatter, chatter, chatter. But once one quiets that chattering, there is that inner voice that one can come in contact with. SL?
Previously, it was said that it's because of the chaos, it's hard to see the basis, the various bases for universal unity. But we think it's the chaos that we see that convinces us more than anything else that there is universal unity. Universal unity basically means that there's interdependence, we're all connected. What affects one affects all. And do we not see that when there is chaos in what seems to be a different part of the world or involving other people, that it's not just their chaos, it affects us too. It affects everyone to some degree. And the degree at which we feel it are affected by it is a good opportunity to study ourselves and what we may have done to contribute to it, whether through apathy or carelessness or because if we're experiencing it, it's part of our lessons to learn.
Yes, it is part of the lesson we must learn. So the question arises, what do we do about it? Is there anything? SL?
Can't we begin by being less apathetic and less careless with our own thoughts throughout the day? Maybe take them more seriously. If we see germs or seeds or buds of selfishness or carelessness or prejudice or indifference, it's better to wipe them out in the beginning rather than to let them sprout and grow. So we can do that. Start with that.
Yes, we can never be vigilant to our own thoughts and actions, but mostly our thoughts, because as much as we say we do not become angry, or we do not, we see that anger is the root of all these problems, we are ever on guard against our own anger. So therefore, we are surprised at how often that feeling arises without our coaxing. It just comes up, and that's when we must be on guard. I think that's how we have another chat.
It follows along this line. Basic question, is thriving in chaos a plus? When you can affect the chaos and realize a positive outcome at your own expense. So we guess this the if we were just change the wording of it, can we thrive? Can we develop? Can there be a positive effect for ourselves and others in the presence of chaos or suffering? In other words, are those things which we tend to think are negative, are they really positive opportunities?
Well, it certainly is a opportunity to develop our compassion, to see the other. Even though we see the cause and the effect, we need to have compassion for all those that are suffering. Whether, we cannot take sides. There are no sides. We are all one. So what, as was said before, what we do to another affects everyone in some degree. And it's true that what is going on in the world today affects us, and we may not be aware of how profoundly until later. JCS?
Sometimes gardening is a great analogy. The most beautiful roses and the most tastiest of fruits and vegetables grow in compost or manure that can be, goodness only knows, ugly on more than one sensual plane. So from these very horrific circumstances, this tremendous manure of current events can grow tremendous roots and plants and blossoms of universal brotherhood. If enough thinkers around the world are watching, they're watching their own na nature, they're watching the current events unfold, and they're doing so in an active, self-conscious, self-disciplined manner, the fruit of this horrific circumstance is going to be frustration with separatism, frustration with motivation for power and control, frustration with the divisions among religious extremes. And in that frustration, more and more thinkers can turn toward an eternal truth, saying, you know what? That diversity is not reality. The solution, the medicine, the spirituality of oneness is what has to emerge, just like the roses from the worst of the north.
Yes, you need to start asking questions. HPV said that that was her one thing that she hoped that she had accomplished, is to make people think. To make people think. SL, there's another chat.
Well, it certainly expands our conversation about universal unity, which we've only applied to the animal kingdom at this point. So it would, the questioner asked, does universal unity include animals and plants? And well, that's the question. but
what?
More importantly, how do we address that?
Yeah. What, no help? it includes all kingdoms. No one is excluded from this unity. There's unity in the mineral kingdom, which was the first visible kingdom, but there's unity in the elemental kingdoms, you know. But the unity of cohesion is very evident in the mineral kingdom. That's a form of consciousness. And in the plant kingdom, we see the development of sensation or sensitivity to light in particular. But we know that plants are sensitive to human beings, to the vibration that they give off. And then the animal kingdom, which has developed instinct, a pattern of knowing what is right and what is wrong. And then the human kingdom, where bursts forth that self-consciousness, that where divinity can know itself, for I am that. So all of these pieces will be put together and to carry us forward. You know, we're not quite sure the you know, that the plant and animal kingdom, we see more unity than perhaps sometimes in the human kingdom. But we should not deceive ourselves. The unity in the human kingdom is far stronger than perhaps the other kingdoms, because the unity of self-conscious beings can create things far beyond our imagination. You know, that's why we are told or asked that one of the fundamental principles of the Theosophical movement was to form a nucleus of universal brotherhood. Well, that's simply a unity of like-minded people that share the same ideas and values and the same reality, so that it becomes an association of students without a leader, and that leader is oneself. That's why the opportunity of the United Lodge of Theosophists is for us to develop those faculties in ourselves to be better able to help and teach others, so that the United Lodge of Theosophists, we consider it a school, and we're given the opportunity in this school of Eastern metaphysics is by self-induced and self-devised effort. The East, they give you an idea and you are to ponder it. In the West, we give you the answer and want to know how you found it. So, SL?
Just that there's another chat.
Sure.
So the question is, where does suicide fall in the unity?
Well,
there's many ways to approach that. So,
yes. Well, I'll approach one way, and you can approach it another, please. The idea of suicide is one that's dealt with in theosophy. It's a sudden shooting out of life of the physical form. And that suicide is considered rather a selfish act. It may seem harsh, but it's our unwillingness to face the trials and tribulations that are before us and try to escape. And there is no escape. There is just a delay of that experience. But it's simply karma, cause and effect. You know, that there's nothing that is not irredeemable. You know, that the soul that is taken out of life repeats that moment in time over and over again. And Kamaloka, and the decision coming up to that. So that's just a little bit of the ideas on suicide. Ella, did you have a few? No? Okay. Anyone else? Yes, JCS.
Well, it's tough to say. Looking from outside at another individual's motivation. But it seems like the suicide is the ultimate personal, self-centered, selfish action. And I don't mean to say that in a judgmental way. It has to be the culmination of the most painful thought process and emotional process imaginable that is pointed away from universality and away from spirit and focused totally in passions, desires, and what appears to be a unique personality. It's tragic, and if only the troubled soul could find the study of how one life lived in vain, or one action of such a magnitude would bring such violence and sorrow and frustration to the greater world. It's very, very sad.
Yes. SL?
Well, it makes one think that if suicide in that light is a crime against our nature, great nature, ourselves, our purpose, then looking at it from the other point of view, what a wonderful opportunity it is to live. Sometimes people think that the belief in reincarnation and karma and the spiritual nature leads to an indifference to life, to the problems of the world, to the experiences of others, and only concerned with our own spiritual development. But that kind of attitude is almost as selfish as suicide in that light, not only caring for our own development. So as bad as suicide seems to be, the taking of one's life, the living ones of one's life is that much more precious.
Yes.
If put to a good purpose. We don't mean the gratification of the senses and the desires, but to the right purpose.
Yes. Well, this one life gives us the opportunity constantly to do better, to move forward. And we do not want to move back. And that is by giving up. And the haunting words of HPB is try, ever keep trying. So even though we may feel inadequate. We may be in a dark fog at the moment, and we may be able to see clearly. Be quiet. Be still. The fog will pass. And then, again, we begin to try to move forward, to benefit that life around us. And how can we do that? Constantly keep a vigilance on our lower nature. Have a positive attitude. Keep that positive attitude and give it away. Give it to those who need it. Because the mind is easily distracted. We cannot forget that point. So we must keep in mind, and we are told to keep a seed idea somewhere tucked away in that mental apparatus. And every once in a while, it will drop down into our focus and remind us that we are not these bodies. We are spiritual beings who have descended into matter to bring forth all of matter to a higher state of consciousness. That we do not live for ourselves alone, but we live for others. That is the meaning to life. And that goes for all the other kingdoms. We need to have a compassionate attitude to life itself. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. All religions are the same. They come back to the root. Theosophy is that root. And I see the last chat is so many only live for themselves. Well, that's called selfishness. Yes, but there's many who are unselfish. Many, many families who are very unselfish. And then we only hope that someday we will be able to be selfless and to be a real contribution to the world around us. Well, we hope you found these ideas helpful. We invite you to our meetings this coming week, this Wednesday and Sunday coming up. And we remind you that we are a school, and we are sustained through voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. All are welcome to contribute, but nothing is implied or inferred by this statement. So have a good week. It was a real delightful morning. That extra hour of sleep was very helpful, and our conversation as well. Have a good day.